We wanted to do something different. The industry really appealed to us. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's very young, it's very energetic. It's also fun to create something and put so much time and patience into something and have it come out. It was, you know, the thought of that, I think, was really rewarding.
That was Cam Forminka, one of the co-founders of Willibald, a gin distillery out in Ayr. And I'm Beth Bowles, your host for this episode of TCE Radio. Since their opening in April 2017, Willibald has been making their mark in Waterloo Region. You've probably seen their bright yellow branded Volkswagen around town, it's pretty hard to miss. Or maybe you ran into Cam at a community event, like the Arabella pop-up on Ontario Street 2 weeks ago, or even at Steel Rails. Needless to say, their visibility in the community is worthy of praise, but they aren't stopping there. I met up with Cam last week to discuss the future of Willibald and a new project that is set to launch within the next few weeks. But before we get to that, I asked Cam why he and the other two founders, Nolan and Jordan, decided to make gin opposed to other spirits.
Like I said, we don't drink vodka, so we weren't going to make that. We kind of have the philosophy that we were only going to make things that we would actually want to drink. So vodka's out. We don't grow sugarcane or any kind of like major sugar substrate here outside of sugar beet. So rum was out. When it came down to it, gin was the only thing really left that we thought had a lot of potential. Gin is just juniper flavored vodka. But outside of juniper, you can have whatever you want. So the possibilities are limitless. Knowing that we loved oak aging and oak aged products, aging a gin seemed like a really cool opportunity. It wasn't really being done really at all in Canada. I mean, there are a couple of distilleries across Canada that are doing it, but not many. We're definitely the only one I know of that opened with an aged gin off the bat and as their only product. Again, just like something unique, something that had complexity. I come from a bartending background. I saw a lot of benefit in having a gin that you could use in most of the traditional ways that you would use a gin, but having that age component to use it now in cocktails that would typically require an age component that a normal gin would, or an unaged gin would not be ideal for. And unaged whiskey obviously doesn't fill that void. So it's like, aging the gin, we felt, was almost like two birds with one stone. It was almost like creating two products in one, and it gave us the opportunity to create a really unique product. It gave us the opportunity to create a product that's very versatile in the cocktail world, and then also taking pressure off us from really needing to create something super quickly after. It gave us time to hone in what we wanted to do next and chip away at it.
The guys at Willibald have already proven that they're good at producing gin, but they have also proven that they will never just do the bare minimum. Having been open now for a year and a half, Cam and his partners have big plans for the distillery and will be executing a new project in just a few weeks.
We always knew that that was a huge thing. If we can create a reason to get people out here and have them experience it, we could really get people on board with what we're trying to do. So knowing that, we wanted to create more reason for people to come out here, and one of the ways that we felt the best emphasize the farm was to build a restaurant out here. Farm to table type stuff where you're doing as much as you can on the farm and really drawing on the agricultural nature of this business. It gives us the opportunity as well to showcase our products and our spirits the way we envision them. Mm-hmm. Not to say that that's the right way or the wrong way. It's just how we envisioned it and envisioned them being represented. So there were a lot of upsides, you know. It's essentially, I mean, distilling has always been an agricultural process. People classify now as industrial, but realistically, all my input for it are agricultural.
You can catch my full story about Willibald and the new restaurant in the September issue of the Community Edition, which will be coming out on September 5th. But until then, the August issue is still available up and down King Street. Now, we're going to switch things up. I'm here today with one of our volunteer writers, Cameron Clapwick. Cameron is the author of The Side Hustle, which is a new column that we introduced in January. So we're going to talk a little bit about side hustles and what Cameron's been doing with the column. How's it going, Cameron?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for coming down despite the heat. It's, as we've said before, it's uncomfortably warm in our studio yet again, the same as last month. But I mean, fall's coming, so hopefully we get out of this. So Cameron, you've been writing for the Community Edition since January, which is when I met you. I think I met you before then, probably in like December.
Probably December, yes.
Yeah. So why did you reach out to me to write, which was super cool because usually it's me begging people to write for the paper. Why did you reach out?
To be honest, I had been looking for some sort of accountability mechanism to get me back into writing. I had written a fair amount during university, both academic and personally, not necessarily for like the local student paper or anything like that, but then kind of had fallen out of that. Writing became something I associated more with the work I was doing than something I actually found life-giving and enjoyable. So that's the main reason I reached out about writing a column in general. And then specifically, there were a number of different ideas I was bouncing around in my head at that point. So.
Yeah, I think when we met, we had talked about what you were interested in writing, and you said that it was very like human-centered, focused on like highlighting specific people in the region, which obviously I'm always down for. That's what I love to do. But when we actually met, it was a really good kind of brainstorming session to kind of narrow down a vague broad idea that you had to kind of like pinpoint and see exactly what we were going to do with this. So the concept of the side hustle was something that I believe it was my publisher, Lincoln Barton, who had mentioned it to me earlier. I think it was definitely a concept that existed before I came into this role. And I thought that you were a really perfect fit, given what you were interested in, to write about people doing side hustles. So do you want to tell our listeners what a side hustle is?
Sure. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a side hustle is generally anything you do that you're passionate about, that you do outside of your regular job. For some people, that's definitely an income-generating thing. For others, it doesn't necessarily generate a lot of income right now, but it could be something they're working towards. I've interviewed people who have side hustles that generate them significant amounts of income, and I have other people who are just doing things they're passionate about with the hopes of maybe 5-10 years down the road of finding some sort of second career. So
So you've interviewed, you've written 5 installations of the side hustle since January, and they've all been super popular. They've done really well. I've really enjoyed reading them. But I think like the diversity in your subjects that you choose to include is definitely worth noting. I mean, you've interviewed Bashar Jabour, who's a writer, and then you've also interviewed someone like Jade Billow, who's actually like fully making money off of her side hustle right now. I think it's been really great, and that you haven't really been repeating anything, which is really awesome. How do you find your subjects that you're going to write about?
You know, it's interesting. It's not even that difficult to find people anymore. I think, given that we live in the age of social media, it's quite easy for people who are looking to launch their own endeavors to self-promote. And then it's quite easy for people like me, with the right keyword searches, to identify and locate. But a lot of them have just been through connections in the community. And I think that'll be continue to be the way I find people, is just through referrals.
Yeah.
I think I met Lacey Heels just at a networking event through somebody else I met through Facebook. Brianne, I just randomly stumbled upon her flower petal account on Facebook one day.
Yeah.
Bashar, I knew through a friend from a party a few years ago. And then once you get chatting with people, I think their side hustle generally comes up pretty prominently in conversation, because it's a thing that gives them, you know, the most life. And so I'm not too concerned about, you know, how I'm going to continue finding people. I think it's quite obvious that there's a whole host of fascinating people doing interesting things. And I think it's particularly common for people to be pursuing a side hustle these days, both because it's essential to do that in order to keep up with rising cost of living, but also because I think there's something about, I don't like using generational labels, but millennials, Generation Zs, I think there's something about those generations in terms of wanting to find work that delivers some sense of meaning or purpose to their life. But the reality is that not every 9-to-5 job inherently has that much level of meaning to it. And so for a lot of people, the side hustle itself is the place that they go and find that meaning. Or for some people, they're sitting in an office all day, but they want to get outside and do something active, or they want to be in a yoga studio, or they want to be in, you know, the art studio painting, or they want to be baking or doing something that, you know, maybe as a ER nurse, as Brianne is, they don't get to do. So for some people, it's just having their entire skill set represented in the course of their day.
Yeah, I think so the story that you wrote for the August issue, which is out right now, I almost forgot what month it was. I was like, what?
Yeah. Summer's almost gone.
Yeah, I know. So the column that you just put out about Brianne and Flower Petal, that one was, I found that one really interesting because she's a nurse, which is labeled as being like one of the busiest jobs that anyone could have, but then she's also baking these like phenomenal cakes that are so beautiful. And I was just reading that column, I'm like, how is she doing all of this? So I think that like using that one specifically as an example, it kind of like opens your eyes up to like a world of possibilities outside of the job that you might have.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's definitely like, it definitely makes me think about like, what other things could I be doing?
I know. It's simultaneously inspiring, but also sometimes defeating because you meet these individuals. And I think Jade fits in the same category of people who are just doing so much. I mean, you know, Brianne's on her feet for 10 or 12 hour shifts, and then she comes home and she, you know, her passion is to make these super detailed, gorgeous cakes. Or Jade Billow with her yoga studio, when she started up, she was working a 40-hour a week job, and then in every spare moment, so from 6:30 to 8:30 before work, over her lunch hour, and then after work, she'd be in class doing sessions, or she'd be in the space that she had rented out doing renovations, and so she was working 80, 90, 100 hours a week. It worked for her. I mean, I think what I've learned is there's no formula, right? For some folks, doing 80 hours, 90 hours a week isn't going to produce the same sort of burnout that it definitely would for me. So that's what sort of lets me let go of some of the jealousy or the frustration I have, because I think you look at a person like that and you wonder, well, you know, where's my side hustle? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. But some people, it's something much smaller. Like, it's not something that consumes quite as much of their time outside of their 9-to-5. So
yeah, I think like when you started the column in January with Lacey Heels, I think that first one was, it was a really good start. It was a really good introduction to the column, because I think that what Lacey's doing, focusing specifically on makers, is kind of the stereotypical picture that people have of a side hustle, is someone's making something or somebody's doing something. And then you kind of expanded it now into, we're looking at several different things. Bashar being a really good example of that, somebody who works in the tech industry, but then has a very arts-focused passion. For those of you who don't know, Bashar is involved in KW Poetry Slam.
That's right.
In his spare time, and is working on a book. So I think it's definitely taking on so many different shapes and forms.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Sometimes I wonder whether or not I'll keep finding new individuals to interview. But then somebody else pops onto my radar. So somebody that's been on my radar recently is Laura Hart, and she does something called style coaching. So she meets up with people and she advises them on their wardrobe. She helps pare down, and she helps, you know, people with hoarding tendencies ensure that they're really only keeping things that they need. And that's something completely unique that I'd never heard of before. And that's what I'm really hoping with the column, is that it can focus on a real diversity of people. So Lacey was a fantastic start. I think makers generally, especially artists, are people that we think of as just having to work really hard to earn a living and make it work. Because, I mean, I personally think that art is not valued enough. And oftentimes the things that people do as side hustles are things that they really have to work hard to convince people that there's a lot of value in what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something that I really appreciate about doing in this column, is showing people how much work it does take to do what these folks are doing. Just how much time Bashar puts into his poetry, just how much time Brianne puts into crafting her cakes. Because I think there might be a misconception sometimes about how quickly you go from, start to finish with a project like that.
Yeah.
But, no, to learn about the person behind it too. And I think that's also part of our emergent conscious consumer culture, is that people want to know the stories behind the brands. They want to know the individuals behind the products. And I think it's really important for people to know those stories. And they're wanting to pay a bit more for a product if they understand that it's made by somebody that really put some serious TLC into what they're doing and who's really concerned about supporting the local economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for sure. I think it's really important too, as a community, that we recognize those people. I'm definitely a huge advocate for supporting local, shopping local. But I think our community does do a pretty good job at doing that. Like someone like this, the second person that you profiled in the Side Hustle, Claudine Brown,
yes,
who runs Culture Fancier. She was shortlisted last year for Best Local Writer in the Community Edition's Best of
Waterloo
Region. So, I mean, we're seeing things like that. And now I keep on seeing her on Twitter now being like, let's get shortlisted again, which is so great that, like, we've opened that channel of communication where she's taking part in an initiative that we're doing and it can hopefully help everybody out in the end. But yeah, it's one of the things that I've always loved about KW is that everyone is willing to buy the t-shirt, everyone's willing to buy the ticket and help each other out, go to the gallery openings and all of that stuff. And I think that those are things that we need to put on a pedestal more, which is one of the reasons why I love this column, why I wanted to run it.
For
and
sure.
Why I thought that you were the perfect person to run it. I've met some of the people, I haven't met everybody, but some of the people that you have interviewed, and they all have such good things to say about you. Like, I met Cameron at a party a couple months ago, and he reached out. And like, I think you as a person too, you're just very well connected, and you have a fairly diverse social circle, which is working in your benefit for writing the column, I think.
Yeah, and I genuinely do care about people's stories. Like, I'm fascinated by people, and I'm fascinated by where they end up. One of the reasons I was really interested in writing the column is because I had considered my own career shift, or wanted to start my own little side hustle, and was thinking about doing career coaching itself.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by how people end up doing what they do, and the trajectories that they follow. Some people end up doing things that they never planned on doing.
Yeah.
Other people are super intentional and new since the age of six. And so I just love sitting down with people. And now it's nice to be on the other end and having somebody ask me the questions.
Yeah, you do have exceptional conversation skills. Like, from the first time I met you, I was like, wow, he's such a great conversationalist. Like, I feel like you always have something to say, always something to contribute, which is another reason why I was really happy to have you on board to write the column, because I knew it was going to be good work.
Yeah, and it's definitely different. Like, I actually do a lot of interviews in my own job as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in that context, I'm interviewing newly arrived Canadians, so sponsored refugees that have been in Canada for 3, 4, 5 months. And oftentimes in those interviews, there are language barriers, there's interpreters, and there's other dynamics like that at play that make it a bit more challenging to get a solid interview and those choice sound bites that you need to construct a compelling article. So it was a nice transition to be able to sit down and do interviews with folks and pretty much just have columns almost laid out for me, because all the folks that I've interviewed, every single one of them have just had really interesting stories and have just been pretty articulate people, and that really helps when you're constructing something that is not necessarily supposed to be put together by me. It's supposed to be representation of whoever the person on the other side of the table is.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of alluded previously to, like, your own personal side hustle with career coaching or transition coaching. Mm-hmm. So the first time I met you, you had told me about this, that it was something that you wanted to dip your feet into, and I had never heard of transition coaching. I didn't know it was a thing. So do you want to tell everyone who's listening what that's all about?
Sure. I think, in short, transition coaching is a subset of career coaching, and it refers to the fact that, particularly for people my age and younger, you're going to work in a ton of jobs in your lifetime. And so you're going to have to be constantly navigating the job market. You're going to be constantly transitioning, if not necessarily from one type of job to the next, at least from one employer to another. And those can be challenging and stressful transitions. And oftentimes they lead to existential crises, or they just lead to a recognition that cover letters and resumes are just really shitty things to have to put together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the hope in starting up transition coaching, and I've only done a little bit of it so far, but it's been really interesting to meet with a few folks and walk alongside of them in their journeys. The hope is that people really clarify how work is simply one aspect of their life, and they can walk a bit more gracefully through those transitional moments, understanding that they may not land what they consider to be the perfect job next time around. But people don't work 30, 40 years in the same job. The social contract between employers and employees is dramatically different than it was when my parents first entered the labor market.
Yeah, of course.
And because of that, I think our mindset has to change too, and our expectations have to shift. Mm-hmm. I always tell people the secret to life happiness is low expectations. And I don't think you should have super low expectations, but I do think that a lot of unhappiness in life is caused by misguided expectations about what is out there and what is attainable, at least in the immediate term.
Yeah, of course. Cool.
Yeah.
So what is your goal with the column, or where would you like to see
sure.
the column, like, in a couple of months, moving into the fall?
Yeah, one thing I haven't done yet in kind of building a potential future roster of interviewees is to actually be intentional about trying to cover a range of interview subjects or a range of types of side hustles. So one of my hopes is to sit down and be a bit more intentional about sketching out some possible side hustle areas, or even just doing a bit of scoping research with people who are well-connected, like Lacey Heels, to say, what are the different types of things that people are doing, and what are the different, like, can we create some categories of side hustle, just to ensure that there is an excellent diversity of interviewees being covered. In terms of the format, I'm just really enjoying how things are going. I think I've learned a lot about interviewing. I've gotten a lot better at moving through a person's story in a shorter amount of time. I think the first person I interviewed, we talked for like 2 hours, and you come back to the and I think I almost transcribed the whole thing too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I am never doing this again. It took forever.
I remember that so clearly the first time you wrote, because I will be the first one to say that I have a tendency to do that too. Like, if I can get an interview with a subject to be under an hour, like, I'm doing well. I think it's because I like to be very casual in my interviewing style. Like, I don't like to be confined to a list of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I take pride in, is how I interview subjects. But I definitely felt for you when you told me you have like 2 hours worth of content, and then you have to go through it, listen to it, transcribe it, pick the parts that you like, which that's the part that takes the longest when writing a story.
It does.
After you have your quotes and after you have the information, lacing them together, that's the easy part.
And I'm such a procrastinator too, because I'll do the interview and then I'll sit on the content for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I'll forget the conversation. And so I got to listen to the entire, like, it's like I got to do the entire interview all over again.
Yeah. It's,
instead of sitting down right after and jotting down the 3 to 4 major themes, and then.
You and I are very similar with that. Like, I have 40-minute interview. It was 40 minutes. It's not really that long, but a 40-minute interview that I was going to transcribe yesterday. And then yesterday just got away from me, and I was like, oh, I'll just do it on Friday.
So you still transcribe?
Did I still transcribe?
Yeah,
of course.
Okay, I've stopped transcribing completely.
I don't transcribe. It depends what you...
Okay.
What you qualify as being transcribing. I don't transcribe in full.
Okay, yeah.
I listen, and parts that I like, I transcribe that part. I know some writers that transcribe what they say.
Wow.
I know. Like, they're almost like they're typing out...
Even though that voice is not entering into the...
Yeah.
...column whatsoever.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I didn't go to school for journalism.
Sure.
So, secret's out, but every time I hear, like, another writer saying that they transcribe in full, I have, like, a panic attack that I've been doing my entire career wrong. But, you know what, it works for me.
If I had the money, I would buy some sort of fancy AI program that would do it for me.
They exist.
Yeah,
they
but
like
to write websites. A volunteer column, it probably is not going to happen, but...
This is true. So if people have ideas for the side hustle,
yes.
or if they want to talk to you about transition coaching,
mm-hmm.
how can people get a hold of you?
They can email me, although my name is not the easiest to spell.
It's not.
I've
got it down pat now.
Okay, Cameron's an easy one.
Okay.
But Clapbook is a bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. So my initials are CK. So remember, Clapbook starts with K.
Mm-hmm.
L-A-P. W-Y-K.
Okay.
People always put C-K at the end. So K-L-A-P-W-Y-K@gmail.com.
Cool.
That's the easiest way. If not, just reach out to Beth and she'll put you
in touch. This is true. Yeah, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of.
That I want you to be my middle person because people can't spell my last name. But
well, your name is also attached to the
this is true.
Column. It's in
this
print.
This is true.
So, yeah, get a hold of Cameron if you have questions. He's a great person to just chat with.
Thanks, Beth.
Anytime. Do you like how I was talking about you in third person there, like as if you weren't still sitting
I'm right
there?
Here.
Cameron's great.
Being gently stroked.
Thank you so much for coming in
of
and
course.
Talking to me. And thank you for writing the column. I look forward to it every time you write it. Right now, the column that is available in print is about Brienne from Flower Petal. It was a great story. So if you're around uptown or downtown, be sure to pick up the print edition of the community edition or check it out on communityedition.ca. You're going to be taking a break for September, but with the column.
That's right.
Correct?
I'll be in the woods.
Yeah,
so don't try to get a hold of me in the next week or so.
Cameron is going deep into the woods. Hopefully he comes out in one piece. But moving into the fall, I hope to see more from you, and we'll keep an eye on people doing cool things in the community that deserve to be highlighted.
Send them my way. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks. TCE Radio is a product of the Community Edition, Waterloo Region's independent monthly newspaper. TCE Radio is produced by Kara Lucas and is hosted by me, Beth Bowles. Our publisher is Lakin Barton. To listen to more episodes of TCE Radio, go to communityedition.ca or check it out on the iTunes app. Thanks for listening.